this is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In. Today, I'm joined once again by Talia. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for recording with me today.
Of course.
Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised. Also, spoilers ahead. Today we are discussing Kinji Fukasaku's film Battle Royale. Following a major recession, the Japanese government passes the Battle Royale Act, a piece of legislation which means that a group of young people are forcibly marooned together on an island and forced to kill each other until one survivor is left. Talia, what is your history with Battle Royale?
So, I watched this for the first time maybe 7 years ago. I'm not totally sure. It was like 2012 or something like that, and it was on a total whim. It was like 3 a.m, and I don't know like what people put this on. Like, I don't know, I had no idea what it was about, and I was getting into watching like disturbing movies.
Ooh,
so like,
yeah,
it was around the time when I watched like Audition and Martyrs. So I think I was just like going through a list and I saw this and I was like, okay, I'll just watch this like at 3 a.m. for whatever reason.
That's so hectic.
I really loved it. What's that?
So hectic to watch this movie at 3 a.m.
It was, yeah, like, at the time when I first watched it, it was, like, super serious to me, and I was like, oh my god, it's so bloody, it's so, yeah, like, scary. And then, yeah, watching it, like, a second time, like, recently, I was like, this is kind of corny.
Yeah, very melodramatic, hey?
Oh, yeah, super melodramatic, like, so, like, teen drama, almost.
Yeah, yes.
But with so much blood.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I think I saw it in high school. A friend of mine was, like, a big fan of, like, yeah, like, gory, disturbing, violent movies. And yeah, this is another one that's been, like, similar to Martyrs and Audition. That's just, that was just, like, built up, that it's, like, this movie's so wild. Like, yeah, you'll never get over Battle Royale. But then, like, yeah, it was, like, very cool and very stylish and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked
it. Yeah, it's, like, very beautiful.
Yes, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Sorry, my dog's doing something weird.
Yeah, my cat's in here and I'm really afraid he's gonna go to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, please don't go to the bathroom right
rude
now.
Rude.
So rude.
So Battle Royale is an example of Asian extremity. So extreme cinema is a genre of film distinguished by its use of excessive violence, torture, and sex of extreme nature. Extreme cinema is highly criticized and debated by film critics and the general public. There have been debates over the hypersexualization that makes these films a threat to the mainstream community standards. There has also been criticism over the increasing use of violence in modern-day films.
Oh,
did you hear that?
Wendy!
Some criticize the easy exposure and unintended targeting of adolescents by extreme cinema films. Some examples of these extreme films are Takashi Miike's Audition that you mentioned, Ichi the Killer, and Park Chan-wook's Vengeance Trilogy.
So, back on what I was saying about, like, it being a goofy movie, this movie can be looked at as a satire. So this movie is kind of similar to The Hunger Games. However, mm-hmm. unlike Hunger Games, Battle Royale is, like, way more comedic and self-aware, mm-hmm. maybe a satire. Sometimes something I always found funny yet so horrible is when, like, at the beginning of the movie, there are two students and they get a bag of weapons, mm-hmm. and there's two characters that end up getting a pot lid and the other character gets a pair of binoculars.
Yeah.
It's so sad. So satire, by definition, is the use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics and other topical issues. Mm-hmm. So the characters are all very sincere and emotional, yet it's so soapy, which I think they do intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then filmmaking is very strange, and the bizarre moments seem to, like, really fit, though. It's over the top, makes it really, like, believable as rebellious, awkward, desperate teens.
Mm-hmm.
But it walks, like, a thin line of violence meets emotional character-driven storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's so extreme, and the violence and progression of the plot are grounded in the relatable high school experience that we see in this violent, gory setting.
Mm-hmm.
It can be looked at as a satire in that the extreme premise sheds light on just how petty and tragic the dynamics of cliques, broken friendships, insecurity, trying to fit in, all the stuff in high school that you think are going to ruin your life, really are.
Yeah.
And also the belief that children have that, like, adults are out to kill them or ruin them idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how melodramatic teens can really be.
Yeah.
So, like, what if your teacher really did hate you? What if the social ladder really was life or death? Like, popularity or death? So it's so absurd, and I think looking at it this way is what makes this movie, like, seem so teen and, like, literally the most overdramatic teen overreaction displayed in a movie. But, like, it's this interesting, like, view on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, because I feel like when you're a teenager, like, everything is, oh my God, if I don't do, like, this, I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Or if my teacher fails me, I'm gonna die, you know? So, yeah. I don't know, the characters at the beginning, like, getting the pot lid or the binoculars, like, they were just dealt a bad hand, like, just in high school. And you never know, like, who's going to be popular or successful. But, like, some aren't going to have that good experience. Or they're going to be set up to have a bad experience one way or another. So those who like the good weapons may or may not necessarily have a good experience either. Mm-hmm. But, like, as cheesy as it is, those who have good intentions and help each other and are kind, like, may be the ones who are the most successful in the end. So, like, whether it's a satire or not, the film is about emotional conflict that teens experience every day, validating the true horror of high school that teenagers face. So, like, it's life or death for them, you know?
And to sort of go on to, like, yeah, further discuss the satire and the sort of melodramatic elements of this film, I have a quote here from The Guardian, which was published September 14th, 2001, so, like, when the film was initially released in the States and in the UK. So it's a futuristic nightmare. It's a satirical vision of Japan's fear and horror of its reluctant, disorderly younger generation. It's a pulpsploitation shocker with guns, knives, blood, and kinky school uniforms. But what it is most of all is violent, very, very violent. The kind of violence which is not ironized in the manner we have been accustomed to in the past 10 years, but presented in an eerily formal melodrama. So yeah, like you said, like the very like over the top relationships, over the top acting. So melodrama is a sensational dramatic piece with exaggerated characters and exciting events intended to appeal to the emotions. So I believe that melodrama is portrayed in the score, the basketball game scenes, and in the relationships between the students, namely the budding romance between Shuya and Noriko. The sensationalism and emotion of the film add an exaggerated humanity to the characters since we get to know them as the film progresses. I find this especially true in the character of Mitsuko, who is initially framed as the mean loner girl, yet as the movie goes on, we learn about her abusive childhood and see her be resourceful under such violent circumstances. And actually, I find her death to be the most upsetting because it's, you see her die in this very violent way, and then it's shown with scene of the basketball game where she's sitting by herself and then gets up and leaves. And I feel like she wanted a different life for herself, to not be a loser, as she says. And yeah. She may be a bully, but we learn about why she may be violent or mean or manipulative, which I always appreciate.
Yeah, she's such an interesting character. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's the only female character that actually, like, embraces the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's a popular girl who, like, longs to, like, never be a loser. She came up in an abusive home, and, like, once becoming a teenager, she began exercising her own, like, looming sexuality as a force of power.
Mm-hmm.
So, from Bitch Media, Battle Royale does stereotype its female and male characters to conform to society's ideas of femininity and masculinity. Most of the women are rendered weak, helpless, and in need of protection, where some girls need the help of their male friends to survive. Noriko, whose protection is passed on when her initial protector is killed. Others cling to each other in the hopes that some sort of sisterhood will unite them and make them strong enough to survive, showing a kind of stupidity on their part since there can only be one winner. These united girls end up in anarchy as one of them eats a poison dinner meant for the male classmate, and suddenly they're all slaughtering each other without even trying to overcome the misunderstanding. In total contrast to this, we see male students working together in perfect harmony, even when with the moments of misunderstandings, as a few of them work together to get the death collars deactivated. The male characters do their best to protect the female students, but only the ones that they have strong emotional relationships with the men.
Mm.
So they also say the only strong female character also happens to be presented as the villain of the piece, as does the previous winner of the game, who happens to be a young girl, although we only see her briefly at the beginning. And this is possibly because she's independent, sexual, and in control. Mitsuko is violent. She quickly becomes a killing machine in order to survive, and even uses her sexuality to do so. A loner in her class before the slaughter, a victim of sexual abuse and a murderer at a young age, in self-defense against the men who were going to abuse her, she now just doesn't want to be a loser anymore and uses everything at her disposal to win. This includes her obvious sexuality, which she uses in ways similar to a Venus flytrap. A good deceiver, she entices two male classmates, and while they feel at ease, happy to be getting any sexual action, she kills them. So who's at fault for this? The girl who is just playing the brutal game like all the other students in order to survive, or the boys who stupidly thought that sex was worth the risk? Yet Mitsuko is the villain, which may actually just be acknowledgement of current gender expectation in Japan, which is where the film and book are based on after all. So in Battle Royale, they say the only strong female character is shown in a negative light. And I feel like a lot of the female characters are shown in a negative light. The film is an acknowledgement of not only the world we live in right now, but also the human condition and the gender roles that were currently prevalent in society that's supposed to be based on equality. However, it's anything but that. While these films are fictional and depictions of harsh dystopia, they're also reflections of our present issues in society. They show us how grim our own realities are without the slaughter games and authoritarian powers that make the battle royale world so frightening.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that, like, while a lot of the, like, the girls that are trying to, like, all hide together and want to remain friends and cooperate, it's still, like, portrayed as being very emotional,
mm-hmm.
and rather than, like, logical or whatever, which is always such a frustrating dichotomy.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with their article saying that Mitsuko is the only strong female character, but she's definitely complicated, which I think is like, I just think it's so great that a variety of experiences and traumas are explored through so many characters, because you also have Shuya, whose dad recently committed suicide, I think like the year before, and you sort of see him deal with that, and then him like grieving his friend while at the same time trying to figure out this game. Another portrayal of sort of like upsetting gender dynamics is in the film is the scene between Takako and Kazushi. So Kazushi hits on Takako after she goes for a jog, threatens to rape her, then points and shoots his crossbow at her. She then, thankfully, chases him down and stabs him. And his comments are just so creepy and entitled and remind me of every gross dude I went to high school with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I just think it's really interesting that Fukusaku chose to include a very common depiction of, like, male sexual entitlement and sort of this, like, threat of violence. Like, that I didn't have to have that scene in there. But,
yeah,
I just thought it was really great. And it was really great to see her, like, stand up to him and then attack him.
I know. Yeah, like, she seemed, like, pretty carefree in the whole movie, which I really liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's, like, one that seemed pretty laid back.
Yeah.
But also badass.
Yeah. Yeah, I also enjoyed how some of the students maintain their real-world habits and comforts while being forced to play the game. For example, Mitsuko is shown doing her makeup, which, this is corny, but could also be seen as her, like, maintaining her weapon because she is sort of, like... supposed to be enticing.
Such a good point.
Yeah. Takako is shown jogging, and the girls in the lighthouse make dinner with each other and make each other food and cooperate and like living harmoniously like for a little while until they all kill each other.
Yeah,
I think it's like a nice glimpse into the characters' interior lives before they all kill each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like such a nice like set up for like a calm scene, and then it just takes such a turn.
Yeah, totally. And I guess because it's very nihilistic, and just like there was one misunderstanding, and then they all just like turned on each other.
Yeah, because they're like on edge the whole time, and like they know that they can't trust each other, but it's like they're trying to like cling on to like every bit of like reality or like
totally.
Normalcy they possibly can, until like one thing is like weird, and they're like, okay, back to the game, like.
Yeah, and I guess it goes back to the point of it, of the women or the girls being shown as being, like, more emotional, whereas the boys are more logical and able to, like, adapt and try to hack into the system.
Yeah!
白岩学園3年B組の皆さん、こんにちは。はい、こんにちは。今日皆さんは幸運にも今年度バトルロワイヤルの大賞クラスに選ばれました。おめでとうございます。ありがとうございます。ではこれからお姉さんがルールについて説明します。よく聞いて正しく元気に戦ってくださいね。今皆さんが来ている場所はこんな形をした無人島です。周囲は10キロぐらいで、 住民の人には出て行ってもらって誰もいません。おじいおじい、殺してんじゃねえ。ごめんな、俺が殺しは反則だよな。
So I have another quote here from that Guardian article. So a notable part of the Battle Royale is that it does not take place on television. The winner is excitedly interviewed by TV news crews, but everything else happens far from the cameras. An emphatic turning away from the modernity of violence and a little perplexing. So how can Battle Royale appall and pacify the populace if it doesn't happen on live television? Fukusaku appears to suggest that part of the game's power is its secrecy. Like some strange, newly invented ritual of adulthood. It is a bloodletting that happens far away from the rest of the tribe. So this was like a more confusing aspect of the film to me. So do the parents and adults in this sort of world know about Battle Royale? Because the kids don't seem to know anything about it. And even, like, the teacher on the bus doesn't seem to know about it.
Right.
And the kids are heavily surveyed throughout the game, yet it's unclear if it's being broadcast to mainstream television. And, yeah, like, since the news crews and television viewers only seem to care about the victors of the game, it can be seen as an example of war propaganda, that the actual battle isn't shown.
Yeah.
Just the victor.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, in the beginning, they show, like, the news.
Yeah, like, the little girl.
And then it's, like, after that, they're just on this island, and it's, like, so secluded and, like, so secretive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that definitely raised, like, a lot of questions about, like, who's watching this.
Yeah. And the film was labeled crude and tasteless by some Japanese government officials after the film was screened before its general release. For 11 years, the film was never officially released in the United States or Canada, except for screenings at various film festivals. The film was screened to a test audience in the U.S. during the early 2000s, not long after the Columbine High School massacre, resulting in a negative reaction to the violent content. And I have a quote here by Karen Pagel. Their essay, Fearing the Youth, Economic Turmoil, Adult Anxiety in the Japanese Battle Royale Controversy. So, although often attributed solely to fears concerning juvenile delinquency in the wake of attacks early in the year and the film's depiction of youth violence, the controversy likely stems from a combination of cultural, economic, and political factors that had been building in Japan during the recessionary 1990s and culminated in division between an anxious, confidenceless adult populace and a generation of youths who had begun to reject traditional economic and cultural values. After a decade of economic turmoil in Japan that led to the restructuring of an employment system that once guaranteed employment and benefits for life and a recession that persists to Japan to this day, many of the youth rejected the traditional employment system that had long abandoned workers and instead became accustomed to unstable temporary and part-time employment in order to hang in and keep going in Japan's troubled economy. Sorry, my cat's doing something weird. Many of the adults could not adapt to the changes in the economy, and fueled by several high-profile incidents of teen violence against adults, found a scapegoat in the youth who refused to play the old economic game, a game much like the one depicted in Battle Royale that pitted the youth against themselves in a chaotic system of which they have no control. When Battle Royale was released at the end of the decade and several months after these violent incidents, politicians attacked the film for its depiction of youth violence. However, the politicians' interest in the film was not simply to protect young people from being inspired by the violence of the film. The violence in the film is not particularly extraordinary in the extent of Japanese cinema, but the film's message and depiction of the decay of adult systems that may have exacerbated adult fears at this weakened point in Japan's history. The film, rather than attempt to bridge the gap between adults and the youth rejection of the traditional systems, depicts the adult economic and educational apparatuses as crumbling and the adult populace as giving up and abandoning the responsibilities to the youth rather than deal with the nation's issues. To the youth of Japan, the film's explicit message of Run implores the youth that the only way to win the adult game is to simply not play. So yeah, that was a long quote, but basically, I just think it's interesting how there is this, like, generational gap that is shown in the film, and it's like these kids are forced into this, like, game of competition as a way to control the population, this youth population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I'm trying to remember, like, this movie, there's so many parts to it, but mm-hmm. I feel like there's Shua, is it Noriko?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't feel like they kill anybody in the whole movie, do they?
Shria does by accident, well, kind of by accident.
Yeah, so it's, like, they're not really intending to, like, play the game. Like, they reject it, and, like, mm-hmm. even by the end of the movie, they're kind of, like, faced, like, with the guy, and they're just, like, you know, they have, like, no interest in playing this game, and they're also, like, the people that, like, jump off the cliff. They're, like, I'm not, like, participating in mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see, like, how everybody kind of, like, reacts to, like, this weird, like, authority.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end, like, when they're back on the mainland, they're, like, on the run. Like, they're fugitives.
Yeah.
And hunted down. So that
they're cats.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so they're being punished for not playing the game, too. So, yeah. It's very nihilistic. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, so that's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Also Spotify maybe, and iTunes if I can figure it out. We have a Facebook page, Bikini Drive-In, have a Twitter, Bikini Drive-In, and thanks, Talia, for talking with me about this movie.
Of course.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it in a while, so I was excited to rewatch it. And
yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a lot. There's just so much to it.
Yeah.
And
it's bloody, you've been warned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, if there's anything else you, like, if anyone wants to let us know about Battle Royale or any questions or suggestions, you can email me at bikinidrivein@gmail.com. Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Listener driven radio 24/7 CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.